Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Happy New Year. Welcome to the Board of Public Works. Hope everybody had an enjoyable holiday season. I think, as most people know, this is the last Board of Public Works meeting that I will have the honor of chairing. And I just want to begin by saying that it has indeed been a real honor to serve with both Comptroller Francho and Treasurer Davis. Treasurer Davis, in a few weeks, you're going to go from this green rookie to the seasoned veteran of this board. Congratulations to you, Comptroller Francho, for the last 8 years. It has truly been an honor and a pleasure and a privilege to serve alongside you. Comptroller Francho began his career with the state of Maryland, his public service in the House of Delegates, 1987. That's a long time ago.
Get me a blue bottle.
2007, he took the oath of office as comptroller. And for the past 16 years, he has tirelessly served the people of Maryland. He modernized the operation of the comptroller's office, making it a national model. And in his office, he has instilled a culture of customer service and respect for the taxpayers. He's been a true partner and a true friend. And so it is my honor to present you, Mr. Comptroller, with a governor's citation for your decades of outstanding service to the people of Maryland.
I better have
star of the show. You get up here, Annie.
She insisted that I speak only briefly.
Thank you. I've got to do another presentation here, not nearly as important as that one. But an important one nonetheless. I'm sure many of you follow this story in the news. But on the morning of December 26th, a small plane was taking off from Lee Airport. And it crash landed into an icy Beards Creek that I used to live on, just a few miles down the road from here in Edgewater. And recognizing the danger of the situation, several residents and Anne Arundel County Police Officer Elizabeth Myers took immediate action to rescue the pilot, Stephen Couchman. John Jeline, his son, John Jeline Jr., and Officer Myers jumped into kayaks to reach the plane, which was sinking in the icy water. Unable to use a paddle due to the ice, John and his son used shovels to break the ice and paddle to the plane. Officer Myers used screwdrivers to try to move the kayak across the ice with the pilot in icy water up to his shoulders. John was able to get to the pilot and pull him onto the kayak and get him out of the freezing water. And the natural resource police officers, Albert Liebel and Mark Miller, arrived on the scene by boat, and they cut through the ice to safely bring the pilot on board and arrange for ambulance transport for the pilot. Due to their swift intervention and heroic action that day, a life was saved and a tragedy averted. So all five of these heroes are with us this morning, and we want to present them with governor citations. And now I'll turn it over to my colleagues for some opening comments, and I'll I'll start with the short timer on the board, who I'm sure has a few things to say.
Thank you very much,
Comptroller.
And Treasurer, thank you. Happy New Year. It's obviously a little bit conflicted here for me because I'm here at the last of the 355 meetings of the Board of Public Works.
Jeez.
Should I have been lucky and honored enough to sit, frankly, with you, Governor Hogan, Treasurer Davis, but also Treasurer Cobb and Governor O'Malley. And those meetings, except for the ones that we held virtually due to COVID and bond sales over in our office, I sat in this very chair alongside two terrific governors and two terrific treasurers. We've reviewed hundreds of thousands of contracts over the last 16 years, preserved hundreds of thousands of acres for land and environmental conservation, approved hundreds of billions of dollars in state contracts and capital projects, and effectively executed our critical functions of being fiscal watchdogs on behalf of Maryland taxpayers. Obviously, from time to time, disagreed on some issues, but I'm immensely proud of the fact that this board has always maintained its long-held tradition of working in a collaborative and bipartisan fashion. We've had to make tough decisions and we've taken hard votes, but we've done so with the best interests of Maryland at heart. This institution, the Board of Public Works, is unique to Maryland. It plays such a vital role in effective government operations, transparency, accountability, and how taxpayers' hard-earned dollars are expended and invested, and improving the quality of services and programs that benefit every single Marylander. In this most public of forums, just like we have today, under the watchful eye of our State House Prep Corps, wonderful advocates for the public, our words are put into posterity. We have transcripts where our state's most significant expenditures and capital works have been reviewed and approved by its principal fiscal officers. This is how we ensure proper check and balance and how we maintain the public interest in our government in the great state of Maryland. Governor, I want to thank you for the proclamation. It's the only one I've seen recently that I didn't sign. So, but I just want to thank you again for your friendship and the collaborative partnership that we have shared between our two offices and your entire administration. It's been my sincere honor to partner with you on critical issues facing our state. I'm personally grateful to Governor Hogan for the graciousness and friendship, not only of him, but the First Lady. And it's the reason I asked my wife to come down with me. She's a phenomenal partner for me, but she and the First Lady get along terrifically well. And Mr. Treasurer, my sincere thanks to you as well. While the Treasurer and I have had our fair share of disagreements over the years, he's always been—
That had been fun, though.
Yeah. He's always an honest and thoughtful leader. And it's been a true privilege, Derek, to have served alongside you both in the House of Delegates, the Treasury Department, and here on the Board of Public Works. To the cabinet secretaries and procurement officers who have had to endure many questions and sheets behind that podium up there, my thanks to each of you for your work, your commitment to public service, and for representing and recognizing the crucial role and function of the Board of Public Works. To the Board of Public Works staff, thank you for your professionalism and efforts that have allowed us to carry out our crucial functions. And lastly, to my personal staff, some of whom are here, for their hard work over the past 16 years, careful and diligent research and analyses, their candor and wise counsel, their unwavering commitment to public service. As is true for every politician and elected official, we often get the credit for work done by our staff, which is behind the scenes. So I want to thank my staff, past and present, especially those who have played a role in support of my Board of Works portfolio. In closing, Governor, to the people of Maryland, thank you for the incredible opportunity to serve our great state over the past 36 years. It's been an honor that I will forever be grateful for, and I'm proud of the work that we accomplished together. A lot of people say, what the heck are you going to do? And I just want to say, for one moment, I can look back on my career and say, job well done. Thank you very much.
Now we're going to turn to the sole survivor. I don't have
before. There's a heck of an assumption made that I'm going to get reelected. And we know how that is. The more you start assuming stuff, anyway. When I was in the General Assembly, I thought the best time of my life, or professionally speaking. But I knew when it was time to go. And I never thought I could find anything else that, you know, would really replace what I experienced there. And while that will always hold a special place for me, being here with you gentlemen, it has made the transition for me personally so, so much more fulfilling. So, my purpose, Governor, it's funny, people always, you know, they'll recognize the friendship, the working relationship that the comptroller and the governor had. But what many people don't know is, I believe, we had the same relationship, Governor, that we've always been able to work together. And whether we agreed or disagreed, we respected each other's opinion. And we had the types of relationship when I first came down here, and, you know, people tell me how it used to be. Senator Exum would always, every time something went crazy, well, this is how we used to do it. And so the relationship that, Governor, that I had with you reminded me of those times that Senator Exum used to, you know, reminisce with me about. I want to commend you. You know, when I thought about, you know, your career, you know, leading up to today, you know, the last 8 years. And I thought, what would be the defining moment, or what do you think is the defining moment of the governor's career in Annapolis, or the legacy or that mark? And I'd have to say it's the way you handled the pandemic. That a lot of people, they made it much more political than what it should have been. And I mean, I'm not singling anybody out, I'm just saying people in general. But you essentially, from what I saw, you sort of turned some things over to the lieutenant governor, and you went to work on trying to keep the people of Maryland as safe as best as you could. And for me, and there were other things I know that you did, but that's the thing that sticks out to me, that we were in uncharted territory then. Everyone was scared, and It was different. So was I. You know, no one wanted to leave the house and all of that. But day in and day out, you know, you were before the press giving us updates and doing the things you thought that could keep us safe. And that superseded any other considerations. And I know you took some hits for some things, but, you know, leaders lead. You know, you do what you have to do. So I just wanted to acknowledge that
and
say what a great job you did. Mr. Comptroller, as you mentioned earlier, yeah, we had our time. Both of us just like to get after it. That's really what it's about. But I can't, you know, 36 years is 36 years. You know, you don't get that by accident. The public must think, the constituents must think you're doing something right. Now, nobody has the governor's approval ratings, but yours had to be up there pretty high as well for them to, you know, not only in your district, but then statewide to keep you back. I remember one of my, even though we had served together for a little while back, by the time I first became chairman in 03, my first, like, sort of interaction or whatever with the comptroller, there was a bill or something on the floor, and, you know, I was a new chairman, and I think Chairman Hurston and I were, you know, getting after it a little bit, And then the comptroller sort of spoke up and started, he started preaching for comedy. And I was like, yeah. And then I leaned over, I was talking to Tawana Gaines, former delegate, and I'm like, what does that mean? So I quickly looked it up and I was like, oh, okay. And so, but that was one of my first, real interactions with him other than, polite conversations, him sort of helping me out at that moment on the floor. Again, whether people agreed or not, with you on a given issue, that's okay. It's okay to disagree, but there's a difference, between disagreeing and being disagreeable. And so that's why we're here to bring different opinions and to flesh things out. And for me, Mr. Comptroller, I never had a problem, and I certainly didn't with you, challenging me on things you disagreed with. If I can't defend what I say or what I do, then I shouldn't be saying it or doing it. So to the extent that you kept folks honest or on their toes as, you were doing your job and what you thought was right, and you can't ever fault anybody for doing what they think is right. So I'll just, close with this. I appreciate the time that I've served with both of you. I appreciate your commitment to the state and all that you've given. And there's always, whether you're in office or not, as we always tell people, you don't have to be in office to serve or to give it back or whatever the case may be. So please keep being available to this great state that we all love. And we certainly commend and thank you for your service.
I'm so glad my wife came down.
All right, now that we've got all the crying over with, let's start with the secretary's agenda.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer. There are 18 items on the secretary's agenda and 2 reports of emergency procurements. Item 8 from the Department of the Environment has been revised to clarify the status of the proposal. Item 18 is a supplemental item. That's the Stadium Authority lease. Happy to assist with answering any questions.
I'd like to start with item 18, the new lease agreement between the Maryland Stadium Authority and the Baltimore Ravens. I'm very excited about this item today. This extends the team's commitment to remain in Baltimore at least through the 2037 season, and it supports further infrastructure improvements to M&T Stadium. This agreement is based on the stadium legislation, which was enacted earlier this year with overwhelming bipartisan support, and it reflects the state's strong partnership with the Baltimore Ravens. In fact, we're advancing this agreement several years ahead of the expiration of the current agreement, and it will only enhance the team's presence in Baltimore. It will also expand the economic impact of games and other year-round activities at the stadium. This is an exciting day for the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland, and I just want to, while we're thanking people, I want to take a moment to commend the chairman of the Stadium Authority, Tom Kelso, for his incredible service over the past 8 years, but particularly on getting this lease done. Thank you very much, Tom, for your hard work. Also, want to thank the entire board and Mike Friends, everybody at the Maryland Stadium Authority. This was months and months of incredible hard work that went into these discussions. Also, want to also thank Ravens President Sashi Brown for being here, for your leadership as well. The Ravens truly are a world-class organization, and I'm very proud that we are able to partner with them to keep the team in Baltimore for many years to come. Any other comments? Any comments? Get up and come and get grilled by
I was going to go and get a proclamation for it. But Chairman Kelso, thank you for the leadership you've provided over the years on many different projects. And the state is indebted to you.
It's been a tremendous honor. And I really thank you, Governor. I thank you for the nice comments. And the first time, I was only in front of the Board of Public Works one other time, and that was in early 2015 when we brought down the first schools contract on the 21st Century Schools program, and I thought, wow, I'm not sure I ever want to go back there again. But it's real
on job on the 21st Century Schools program as well, that the stadium authority's gotten all those schools built.
That's a great job by the MSA and the MSA team in partnership with Baltimore City Schools. And but it's a real honor also to be here today on this most auspicious day at the Board of Public Works and to share it with you guys.
Well, I agree conceptually with the governor on the need to keep the Ravens here as their jewel for us. But I just want to make sure we get on the record, you know, what the state's partnership with the Ravens is getting. So maybe you could help me understand, or perhaps the president of the Ravens is better suited to do that, what exactly the state is getting back other than the presence of a great football team. Because I assume there's quite a bit of capital money associated with this lease.
Well, there is. And if you don't mind, I'd like to, you know, maybe outline for you as to why we believe this is in the best interest of the state of Maryland. This agreement is totally consistent with the intent of HB 896. The proposed agreement between the MSA and the Ravens is based on the assumption that it is in the best interest of the state of Maryland and the and Baltimore City that the Ravens continue to play in Baltimore at M&T Bank Stadium, and that the useful life of M&T Bank Stadium be extended as contemplated in HB 896. This agreement is the result of a negotiation where both parties had leverage and there were compromises made during the negotiations by both sides. It assures the Ravens will remain in Baltimore through 2037 and likely beyond. The state, the city, and surrounding counties will continue to benefit from all of the direct and ancillary revenues generated by the team, and also the benefits of having a major civic-minded organization like the Ravens in our local communities. It continues a partnership with the Ravens, who have invested significantly in M&T Bank Stadium, most recently $120 million from 2017 to 2019, as well as their invested in their complex in Owings Mills in Baltimore County. It provides for, one, a growing revenue stream to MSA through continued growth in the ANA tax. The ANA tax increased from $1.75 million in 1999 to $7.3 million in 2022, growing at an annual average growth rate of 13.5%. Two, it causes the Ravens to continue to pay the operations and maintenance expenses associated with the stadium costs. These costs increased from $4.45 million in 1999 to almost $11 million in 2022, and growing at an annual average growth rate of about 6%. Three, is structured to encourage the Ravens to hold more non-NFL in-stadium events, thereby increasing the ANA tax revenues with MSA assuming no risk. And four, continues to permit MSA to retain all non-stadium event revenues, which is more than 200 events per year. As envisioned in HB 896, the agreement is a key first step, and I want to stress first step, in the transformation of Camden Yards and the surrounding communities to a live, work, play environment where the public investment in keeping the stadium best in class can be leveraged by private investment by the teams and or third-party investors, either on the complex or in this area surrounding the complex. It includes a provision where the Ravens agree to participate in a master planning exercise at their own expense. This agreement assures M&T Bank Stadium will remain best in class. The construction projects contemplated in the agreement will create good jobs, underscoring MSA's commitment to prevailing wage and significant economic opportunities for contractors, subcontractors, as well as people in the local workforce. MSA will continue its strong commitment to minority business enterprises and small business enterprises when allocating this work. This agreement assures Baltimore and the surrounding counties remain thought of as a major league city. This agreement is consistent in structure and size of public investment with those of other states and municipalities with publicly financed stadiums of similar age. It is far more cost-effective to extend the useful life of an existing stadium than it is to build a new one. This agreement documents the historically excellent practices for operations, maintenance, and capital projects encompassed in the working relationship that has been developed over 25 years between the Ravens and the Maryland Stadium Authority. And finally, this agreement includes many legal protections for Maryland and MSA that were lacking in the existing agreement, which was essentially an MOU that was never converted to a lease. That helps.
And I understand former President Cass was involved in these negotiations.
He was.
Would you give him my personal thanks and regards?
We absolutely will. And Sachi, I know that you'll be happy to pass that along as well. Yes.
So it's just on a technical point. You mentioned the capital works and construction opportunities. I take it for MBEs as well as small businesses in the area.
Yes.
For the team selected capital works and MSA selected capital works, are you going to come back to this board for review and approval of some of the construction contracts?
Yes, all major construction contracts will come back before the Board of Public Works for approval.
And with respect to labor participation, is there anything that precludes project labor agreements or similar provisions from being included in construction contracts for some of these appropriate capital improvements?
There is not.
Well, thank you again to the leadership of the Stadium Authority and your personal guidance of this. I know it wasn't easy.
Well, it was really a pleasure to work with the Ravens.
I was lucky enough back in the day to vote for the original stadium in the late
work. I know.
Yeah, but I was.
Even though he was probably a fan of that other team in the Washington area.
It took a lot of vision to be able to see what Camden Yards can be. And I hope that HB 896 is just the beginning to be able to more fully build out that vision that the mayor, then governor, and the legislature had as to what the west side of downtown Baltimore can be and how important this complex is to the success of that.
Anyway, just before the vote, I remember a large number of my neighbors picketed my house, Tacoma Park, which is a liberal jurisdiction.
No.
Their signs read schools,
and it was a big deal back then because that was the way the argument was somewhat postured.
And, yes.
And now I think the Stadium Authority has built 27 new schools.
Well, there you go. I hadn't thought of that connection, but I remember going out and communicating calmly with everybody, and they made their points. This was a inappropriate expenditure for privately owned or privately these stadiums. And I said, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Mr. Chairman, I adopted that mode. And the vote was taken. And then about a month later, I remember some of them were very familiar faces, came to me and said, could you help us get a ticket to the that's human nature. It was all in good.
If you and Annie see some of your neighbors out in the front yard when you get back today, it'll just be welcoming you home after the Board of Public protesters.
It's a great community.
Thank you.
If I can, I don't really have a question, Mr. Kelso. Just more of a statement. And this isn't going where I think many of you all think it's going.
Roll out of bed and grab one. I was like, I wanted to wear this specific thing. I had rolled out.
See, quite a few. Somebody rolled out. Anyway, here's the thing, though. And I was there with the comptroller, then the delegate from District 20.
Yes.
And I too cast that vote. I believe it was either 96 or 97 in favor of what's now M&T Bank Stadium. I had the opportunity, I think it was August 9th, as a matter of fact, of this year, to go to the Ravens training camp. And I met
Mr. Bisciotti and had an opportunity to talk with him and Coach Harbaugh and Ozzie Newsome and a few others. And you're right, Governor, they are a first-class organization that we hope can be replicated throughout the state. You like that? Yeah, we hope to have that throughout the state at some point. But be that as it may, I think they've been good neighbors, good corporate partners. So I have no concern with them. I also really have no concern with the stadium authority on this particular matter, because I think the charge you were given was to keep the Ravens in state. And so you all did what you had to do, what you needed to do to make that happen. So really my comments are towards the people of Maryland. And it becomes essentially, for me, sports teams, football teams, and nobody's a bigger football fan than I am. Trust me, I've got all sorts of own whatever from playing. And I never even made it to that level. But what I'm getting at is, I see them as more a source of like civic pride or you know, something that rally all of us together and you know, would be nothing greater in the state if we had, you know, the Ravens, you know, contend. Well, they do actually contend for championships. And then on my end of the state, we can figure out how to get in the playoffs. You know, if we, that would be a great, you know, rallying a point. But the question we're going to have to ask ourselves at some point is at what cost? You know, we are charged, you know, with being wise stewards of the people's money. And so, I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong. That's, and I'm not trying in any way say anything negatively. But we are going to have a choice to make, because that, if I'm not mistaken, if my math's correct, stadium is 25, 26 years old. The agreement is essentially, I think, a 15-year agreement, which means at the end of it, it's going to be 40 years old. I don't know that we keep patching a 40-year-old stadium. We're probably going to have to do a new stadium. Now, when we did these back in 96, 97, or I know that the one in Landover, which was privately financed, it was about $200 million. I'm not exactly certain what the number was for this one.
About the same.
And now I know what the one in Dallas, Jerry's World or whatever, a few years back, it hit $1 billion. So 15, and that, like I said, that was a few years ago. So 15 years from now, you know, we can just imagine what it's going to be. And, you know, when I was awake in econ class, you know, I learned the concept of opportunity costs. You know, what are we foregoing? What else are we foregoing by doing this, whatever, you know, this is in this case, you know, our sports team, our athletic teams. So what are the opportunity costs of doing that? So those are just things, like I said, that's not on the stadium authority. That's certainly isn't on the Ravens. That's on the people of Maryland, because ultimately, you know, we all make that decision, and we have to decide how much that pride is worth to us. And whatever it is, you know, so be it. We need to come to grips with that. So let me close by congratulating you, because you did your charge, sir. You do it in the stadium authority. And let me congratulate the Ravens as well for signing that lease. What is it? One down, one more to go. So
my count.
So I do want to congratulate each of you for us coming to this moment and fulfilling what I believe, from my perspective, the wishes of the General Assembly, but also citizens, certainly in the Baltimore region and perhaps throughout the state, that we get this done. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Treasurer. Appreciate it very much.
Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I do have one. Third. Item 15 of the Maryland State Police. This is more, I don't believe I have any questions on this, but I am going to oppose this particular settlement, and here's the reason why. I'm really not sure what I'm supposed to say or not say as it relates to settlement. So if I'm not supposed to say it, it ain't the first time I've gotten it wrong. I can't support this. See, the crux of the matter of this is that there was an interaction between some members of the Maryland State Police, who are a fine organization. Please don't take this as any broad brush or anything like that. But we're talking, there was a case. They were, I guess, pursuing a suspect who was suspected of narcotics violation or something of akin to that. But we're setting that aside. That's really not the issue. That's sort of been adjudicated, and that's where it is. But it's the actions that occurred that day that have me. I was up last night late debating about what I was going to say or not say or do or not do. But the bottom line is this: there's no way I cannot speak on this. You see, while some things may be in dispute, the bottom line is that we had five officers and we had one suspect who was face down on the ground, but yet a canine, dog was allowed to attack him, to bite him. I believe that the report said on his foot and things of that nature. And while that's distressing in and of itself, the thing that is really disconcerting to me is, the cameras were turned off. The recordings were turned off, so we don't know what was said. You know, it's in dispute. Well, we gave a command. No, you didn't. Well, we wouldn't have that dispute if we had those cameras on. We can't have that. See, and a lot of these settlements come because there's concern about what the jury is going to do. Yeah, jury, I'm always told juries are unpredictable. You don't know what they're going to say. There's a reason for that. And when you have stuff like this where, you know, you have a situation and the cameras weren't on, now we don't know what happens. So people's minds are allowed to think and go places that we hope that they would. But it's perfectly reasonable. Had it been on, it would have been. And when you're talking about dogs attacking people, let me just be blunt. It harkens back for me a time, not that long ago, a ugly part of our history in this country. And so, you know, I read the file on it, and I know why they want to settle. I mean, it could end up being a lot of money, and the proposal is only $75,000, relatively speaking. And I'd say only relative to the amount, it's still $75,000 of people's money. So I don't take that lightly. But for me, this is bigger than the plaintiff in this case. You know, what we're essentially, something appears to nefarious to have occurred, and we're sort of sweeping this under the rug with a $75,000 check. And so I asked a question. I was like, you know, they say, well, the attorney general found that they weren't criminally negligent or something. And so I said, well, why are we settling? Effectively, we're saying everything was okay, but we want to settle anyway. So then I said, all right, well, we're writing this check for $75,000. What type of discipline did the officer or officers have? None. And then, you know, forgive me, but I had to ask one last question last night. What was the races of the people involved? Defendant was black. Four of the five officers were white. It harkens back to that 50s and 60s imagery of what we saw in places like Birmingham, Alabama, where we turn hoses and dogs and so forth on people. Again, this isn't about this particular defendant and his guilt or innocence for why it occurred. It's bigger than him, because while it was Mr. Whomever at that time, it could be somebody else later. It could be another person later. And if we're not speaking on it, if we're not pointing it out, if we're, so, you know, write this check and now go away, You know, when we're talking about the benefit to the state, see, our attorneys, they're strictly dollars and cents, which is fine. I guess maybe as treasurer, I should be too. But I have, for me, I have a greater responsibility than just counting, being a bean counter, counting the dollars and cents. I have a responsibility to the citizens of the state of Maryland, all of us. And we can't have that. We cannot have dogs being turned on people unless it's, I guess, in some manner, absolutely necessary. And so we can't have mistakes. I'll even be willing to grant that. Someone forgot to turn on the recorder. If we're willing to allow that, someone can't have that. And then we have this type of an assault or an occurrence. And now, you know, here we are today. So for me, I'd rather it play out despite the potential cost, to find out what really happened and have people explain themselves. So for that reason, Governor, I can't vote for this.
So did you want to pull this item out for a separate vote, or just say that because we can't, this is the whole?
Yeah, we can move to separate that out.
Is there a second to move it out? Or
I think point of order, when, because we're working on a consent calendar, you don't need a motion if you can just pull it out. Am I incorrect?
That's correct. So, Mr. Treasurer, you can make a motion to disapprove the item. If it fails for lack of a second, the item will move back into its default posture as part of the consent calendar. If there's a motion on the entire secretary's agenda, it would be approved as part of that motion. You can also ask for a separate vote just to be recorded in the negative. Assuming that you make a motion to disapprove the item and it fails for lack of a second.
No, I don't want to do that, and it very well may be in the state's best financial interest to approve it, but I in good conscience can't. So we can separate that out so I can be recorded as voting no, and then we can vote unanimously on the remaining items.
Okay.
Great.
So is there a motion to approve the item?
How about the agenda?
No, just Secretary, you want to be recording the negative. The rest of Secretary Agenda 15 will be, we'll record that as approved 2-1 with Treasurer voting no. Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. Any other questions on the Secretary's agenda, or is there a motion?
Move approval.
Sure. Second.
All in favor. 3-0. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Mr. Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of Maryland Department of Natural Resources. I do just want to take a short moment for a point of personal privilege, because this is also my last Board of Public Works meeting, just to say that it's been a tremendous privilege and honor to serve in the Hogan Rutherford administration and also to serve in this capacity on the Board of Public Works. It's been a really informative and interesting experience. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your incredible service. A lot of people sitting around this room that might be their last.
Yeah. So with that, we have 7 items on our real property agenda that we're seeking approval for today, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Does anybody have questions for DNR? Is there a motion?
Move approval. Second. Need to change that.
Way to finish out, Madam Secretary. Yep. Very good. Next, we have nothing on the agenda for university system, so we're going to the Department of Transportation.
All right. Well, good morning, Governor, Mr. Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Jim Port, Secretary of Maryland Department of Transportation. And today we have the department's presenting 11 agenda items for your consideration. 2 contracts valued at more than $1.3 million are recommended for award to certified small business enterprises. And we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. But I'd also like to take a point of personal privilege, because I've actually had the pleasure of serving with both of these gentlemen in the House of Delegates. And not that we always agreed, right, Peter? But
you ever agreed?
Well, I can't say that. But you know, it's funny how we did our battle back in the day in the committee room or on the House floor, and then we have lunch or dinner together, and that's what we did. And so over the years, we've become really good friends, I think, and it's been a pleasure serving with you in this capacity, or about deputy secretary capacity, public works. I do recognize that Your job is to be tough on us and have us defend our positions. And I appreciate that as a steward of Maryland. And I hope you appreciate the fact that we tried to do the same thing, being good stewards of Maryland. And Governor, of course, it's been a tremendous pleasure working for you as both Deputy Secretary, MDTA, Executive Director, and now Secretary. And I really appreciate.
We had to keep moving you around.
Yeah, I couldn't find a job. You know, I had to, waiting to find it. But no, it's just been a pleasure working with all three of you, and also Jeannie in her capacity, and Ellington and others, Dennis, both administrations, Ehrlich and this one. And so I just want to thank you.
Thank you for your incredible service.
And Peter, I do want to talk to you afterwards about some of what you want to do later, because I think you and I have a lot in common with the kids learning about finances.
Excellent.
Yes.
Any questions on transportation?
Well, I didn't have any, but I had to go on and on. But no, Jim, thank you for those kind comments. And what is your view on the Hurt Bay crossing? Is there some contract in here that locks it into actions on that, or is there?
So there is an A&E contract, two of them that we're trying to award today. It's not just for Tier 2, Chesapeake Bay. It's actually for, we had the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel, AET contract we're working on. We have the Belvedere grant that we have for that Amazon plant up in Cecil County. And we also have the MDTA Facilities Master Plan. And of course, it also includes a Tier 2. So it's an A&E, it's on-call contract for services we may need. And some of it would go to the Tier 2 Bay Bridge project. That is correct. But
I'm in favor of that project. So just asking, because there are a lot of people who are concerned. And I assume that the next administration can review the results.
Well, I think some of the concern is that it mandates the next administration to build a bridge, and that is not true. It does have a no build. First of all, it's just a study, and it's part of the NEPA process, National Environmental Protection Act, and so it always includes a no build provision. So that is one of the alternatives that comes out of this. But it's also looking at transit. So it's looking at bus, it's going to look at rail, it's going to look at ferries, and how those types of modes can also improve the traffic flow across the bridge. So again, it's a study. And so once the study is complete, whatever administration's in place at that time will have the decision if they want to move forward or not.
Very good.
Thank you. We're also going to start a youth lacrosse league, I think.
Oh, okay. I know we got the soccer thing going too, so.
We'll be working on it.
Any questions on transportation or a motion?
Approval.
Second. Governor, one other thing, if you don't mind.
Too late.
You'll like this. So obviously you're giving out awards all the time.
That was 3-0, by the way.
And you're giving out awards all the time. And I told you I had this one item here. You, I think, which captured two of your priorities, and I just want to present it to you.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, most people don't know that I actually designed the new license plate myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very artistic.
Very nice.
All right. Well, thank you. That's 3-0 on transportation. Now we're going to move on to the Department of General Services agenda.
Good morning.
Terry.
Good morning, Governor, and Happy New Year to the board. Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, for the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Governor, in terms of point of privilege, for 6.5 years, I've had the great privilege of presenting the department's agenda for approval to this distinguished board. And Governor, I do want to thank you for the opportunity to serve in the Huntington Rutherford administration.
For your service.
And to all the board members, I want to thank you for your leadership. This also includes Lieutenant Governor Rutherford, Treasurer Cobb, for the efforts to bring greater transparency to the business of the state. And I echo Jim's comments that your efforts certainly have had a positive effect on the Department of General Services. So with that, today's agenda, we are presenting 23 items. The agenda includes $4.1 million in capital grants and loans, and including $1 million to the ARC of Central Chesapeake Region for the Eastern Shore headquarters. Additionally, the department is seeking approval for contract action to support 3 minority businesses and 5 small businesses. And it's a great deal of honor to say we are available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary, for your leadership. I want to start with, and just a note, item number 3. This is a $500,000 grant to Dematha Catholic High School, help them construct a new engineering, arts, and robotics building. And I will admit on the record that I'm a little bit biased on this one, being a Dematha stag myself. But we have several representatives from Dematha who are joining us today. Father James Day, the president of Dematha. We have Tom Ponton, the director of development. Jeff Hathaway, vice president of the board of directors. Charlie Kenny, a member of the board of directors. And Maureen McCart, assistant director of development. I want to thank all of you for everything you do at Dematha, training young people. And it's a wonderful institution. We're happy to support this effort. Go Stack. And one last item I want to mention is 20IT4. This is a task order of the Innovative Workforce Solutions Master Contract. And it's the first contract under the Information Technology Innovative Workforce Solution Program, which we launched last year. This program will provide work opportunities to individuals apprenticing to become information technology professionals, giving them a pathway to break into the industry and to help them develop long-term career opportunities. This Innovative Workforce Solutions Program is directly in alignment with our other workforce development initiatives, including our recent effort to formally eliminate the 4-year college degree requirement for thousands of state jobs and working with partnerships to recruit and market these roles to job seekers who are skilled through alternative routes. So I just want to highlight that item. I'm excited about that one as well. With that, are there any other questions or comments on the DGS agenda?
And approval.
Second.
3-0. Well, once again, thank you. That concludes our last Board of Public Works. Mr. Comptroller, Mr. Treasurer, thank you all. Thanks for a wonderful 8 years of change.